here, because I had thought I would just listen to what was going on and be a bit reactive and try to pull some notes together, and that's proven to be an even more challenging task than I thought it might be. So I just have a very few things to say because we're running late and maybe we'll have a more general discussion.
Well, let's first ask actually how long people can stay, or how much. Well, if after 5 o'clock or something, you can't hold people because, you know, the schedule will tell you someone wants to leave after that.
Anyway,
but we have the room.
Yes, we have the room as long as we want, so.
Anybody leave?
Okay. Well, as I say, I really don't think I'll say too much. I mean, first of all, just picking up on the final conversation, presentation, at Toronto, we've been working on trying to develop all very, very similar, but in a different way. What we hope is very generalized software for model system development called XTMF, Extensible Travel Modeling Framework, and it's being developed in C#, but it's a similar idea of trying to build by building blocks so that it's easy to build model systems various sorts, and to integrate different components. And we actually had a 2-day workshop with the Argonne guys in Toronto back at the beginning of the month. I think we're very mutually excited about what they're doing, what we're doing, and how it's complementary but different enough that we think a collaboration makes a lot of sense. And so we're actually in the process of looking at how we can start sharing software and start sharing collaboration on this. Where XTMF is at, I mean, we have implemented several, or we're close to having implemented several versions of 4-step models that are operational in the Toronto region within this framework. Our TASH activity scheduling model is an implementation within this. It's a simpler kind of, been a little more pragmatic or simplified, I think, in that we tend to talk about modules. Our basic building block is a module. A module is something that does something. And then we build, we create a template, a model system template that says, here's a model system of this type that can be populated with various modules. And so all the programmer, in a sense, the modeler has to do is grab the modules they want. There is an interface to do that. So if it's a 4-step model, you need a generation model that you can choose. Maybe there's several of those distribution models, several of those you can choose from, and you can start building things together. So again, you can write, you still have to write some code at some point, but once you've written the code, you can recycle it, reuse it with common interfaces. So there's a 4-step model template that basically says you can build any 4-step model with any set of valid components with it. There is a TASHA template that would allow us to change components. You know, you want to put a new scheduler in, you put a new scheduler in, that sort of thing. Our iLoop framework, our iLoop integrated land use model will eventually be next to them. And within our own group at the University of Toronto, we've just made pretty much a commitment that all our modeling work is going to go on in XTMF. So Matt Reuter's working on freight models, and Michelle is working on transit route choice, micro simulation. Everything's going to be going into XTMF over the next time frame. So we're very keen on the notion of open source integrated software work as a framework for. You know, we've been talking about integration today within a model. I think there's also the issue of integration across modeling efforts and across research groups to be able to share things. And we've heard today a lot going on. Lots of people are doing lots of things in a whole variety of ways. But how as a community do we really bring that together? We are each writing our own software. We're each doing these things. Is there some way that we can start bringing these things together? Also, I mean, certainly what we're interested in is interfacing with the commercial packages. So as part of the XTMF, for example, we tend to work with EMI in Toronto, so there's already EMI interfaces, but, you know, we're interested in interfacing with other some of the other software that's out there as well. Just more general comments. You know, again, in terms of integration, we've been talking all day about integration, though really defining what we mean by it. There's all sorts of different integrations, but to me, the two key ones I think we're dealing with is temporal integration. Integration interfaces or integrations across time periods, and I'll come back to that. And then another sort of associated with that is kind of the stabilization equilibration issue, which I think is a very big one, and many issues there. The other type of integration we're talking about is, I would say, behavioral across different types of decision processes, different types of agents. And in terms of agent interactions, something we haven't talked a whole lot about except in the transportation sense of networks and so on, there's competitive interactions within markets, basically between demand, supply, and price, and there's collaborative interactions of, you know, social networks within households and so on. There's also kind of a micro level, macro level that we haven't talked much about today, although it's implicit in the transportation stuff, of kind of micro processes, and then there's macro, certainly macro emergent behaviors, but there's also kind of macro processes, in particularly economic, in terms of, if we're talking about, you know, at the land use level and the system state level. So how does the micro and the macro talk to one another? In terms of the temporal interfaces, which I think is one of the critical ones and one we've spent a lot of time on today, and I think the practical terms, when we talk about integration, that's, you know, what we tend to be wrestling with. There's obviously two major ones there, with the demand model sitting in the middle of both of them. One is kind of the daily dynamics of the integration between activity schedule and network dynamics. So how do you integrate the minute by minute, second by second that's going on in the transportation network with kind of the hour to hour, day to day activity scheduling decision making processes? And so we've talked a fair bit about that today. The other major one, which Harry raised, but we haven't talked too much about today, is how does the day-to-day activity travel, daily experience feed into the long-run decisions and location choices of where to live, where to work, where to locate your firm, and that sort of thing. That's certainly something I have personally a very strong interest in, and that relationship between the short and long run is something that's fairly central. I'd be happy to talk about that, but I don't think we have time today. The other thing I really liked Michael Ballmer's talking about sort of mental processes and physical processes and what lies there is, you know, sort of there's decision processes and then there's physical transportation networks and so on. I would just relabel that a little bit, and I would say that, you know, at the heart of what I think we're all trying to do is there are agents that have attributes and relationships and decision-making processes that we consider mental processes, and then there's the world in terms of the physical. There's the networks, there's buildings, and we, the agents, are operating in the world. And through the agent's decisions, the system state, the actual system state out there in the world in terms of population distributions and employment distributions and flows on the networks, sort of the performance of the system, is the outcome of the individual agents. And I think one way of thinking in very general terms about an integrated model is to think explicitly in those terms. And I think one of the limitations we maybe have as a group is we tend to be very focused on the specifics of the problem. So you know, like taking Ram's basic model, he talked about the activity travel model, and then there was the DTA. Well, I would argue, I mean, that's kind of one instantiation of a much more general model, which is agents and the world, right? And for much of us, the world is the network. I mean, our world is the network and what's going on in the network. But maybe it would be helpful from an integration point of view to abstract it. And I think this comes back to the Polaris approach. So it's at, you know, the world, it consists, there's the world and there's agents and there's, you know, things going on. And whether that helps us think about this or not, I'm not sure. And I guess my final comments would be, you know, it seems to me we're all in favor of integration, so why don't we have it? To a large extent, I think we're all working towards it. Clearly, there's computational issues. I mean, the practical issue. I mean, I think computation is extraordinarily important. We have to take it seriously. But I think we're all trying to work towards how do we do this in practical terms. And well, I guess there's kind of two levels. There's kind of a lot of the work we're doing is, again, within individual models, within individual problems, trying to, you know, somehow get things to work together. Maybe we need a little stronger theory about you know, a more holistic view of the situation, and then work towards the practical models. I don't know whether that's helpful, but I also do think you know, this is coming back to the ocean of software. If we could start working in a software environment which was more common, so first of all, saving ourselves from having to continuously write and rewrite our own code, and as Howard, among others, is saying, we often do that very badly. So maybe if we start developing some good code, and so we have a base upon which we can build rather than constantly reinventing those wheels. And as we're developing procedure, you know, how to calculate prisms, how to do this, how to do that. If we could start actually sharing some of these modules and sharing some of these ideas, using them in our own unique ways, maybe that would make some progress, or faster progress, and have a bit more of a common language. Because I think, you know, just from what I've heard today, we still all have very different ideas of what the issues are and what we mean by integration. Some of that's good and essential, because it is research, and we want to be trying different things on. But, you know, is there some way we can start converging our ideas and saying, yeah, that's what we mean here, and we can build on that to the next step? It seems to me as a community. I mean, many of us are engineers rather than scientists in our training, and maybe we need, I think we tend to take a very engineering approach to most of these problems. Maybe we need a bit more of a scientific approach where, you know, we build up a bit more of a body of knowledge that we think is actually kind of, you know, that does make sense, and we'll build on it from there. Anyway, that's my ramblings for this afternoon.
Thanks, Eric. Well, now we have time for opening up the discussion.
I have a question about this whole idea of XTMF or Polaris. I know with all of this data, we've been re-engineering the software, trying to come up with a more generic framework that is more robust than the code that was originally written for that. And I'm not a software engineer, but my experience with that has been there are some challenges in creating an environment in which it's possible for various users of that environment to continue contributing. There's this gatekeeping function that has to happen with the code base. And I was just wondering what either you, Eric, or you might have to say about how viable it is, or what the issues are associated with having this general purpose platform and a whole host of contributors to it.
For us, it's very, very important to abstract the functionality from the actual implementation of that functionality. And that's kind of a weird way of saying it, but the idea is that fundamentally, you know, describing something in a million different names is still trying to do the same fundamental functional concept. So, by having it more as a linguistic database instead of a code database, it much more lends itself to working and collaborating purely on the functionalities. And then the actual data logistics are sort of behind the scenes, implemented as needed to say, okay, this time my color is an RGB, this time my color is, some sort of string, But in both cases, it's the same concept, you just need the translation, translation function. So that's kind of,
Polaris really function in this sort of collaborative environment. A lot of people contributing. separate the model writing layer from the actual process and execution layer. So no one who goes into Polaris or no one who develops models for this will have to see what's in the core functionality of the thing. And that will be guaranteed to work. You know, no matter how many times we update the core or change the processing layer, it's not going to affect the models written in the language.
You guys are providing guarantees.
We're not providing.
Are you so low, Posey?
Well, we will, depending on who's asking. And at the same point, you can, take from David's presentation. We also separate out the low level behavior. So you have this dividing line between, pretty much model writers and people who want to do fast low level stuff. It allows the fast low level stuff people to do their own thing too without destroying what the other. That's a lot of that historical challenge is, when you want to take an existing piece of code and speed it up, and then you're working from that perspective, you also tend to do a lot of destroying. So those are some of the philosophies that feed into it. So basically just, having a pretty much open source concept database that describe it.
Mark?
That sounds good. I think there has to be at least a few people on the project who really understand both sides.
Yeah.
Otherwise, nobody's going to know anything about this.
Josh.
That's me.
Josh is the inventory guy.
It's hard. Especially going towards the software, it's hard to know why a particular solution is going to work better than some other solution.
So that's kind of that's why I put in the slide that one of the big things is we want to talk to a lot of people because we just want to get lots of input and we all have our expertises and some of us are software people, some of us are transportation people, you need to find a way to blend that, so I agree.
Just from the experience in developing the Metzim model, the Metzim framework actually, which is not that precise concept as you performed here, but it's just a modular approach of three parts of the behavioral utility function of the replanning modules and one interface which is called simulation, whatever that is. And then you have to implement the whole simulation by yourself if you want to have a new one. That concept is nice and the modular approach is nice, and we actually thought exactly the same in your schedule to perform all these tasks. You have to do the feedback too, because you have to revamp all that over again, and then somebody has to take care about that, and this is this integration part probably which you also mean, and this integration part will never stop, and it gets worse and worse because more and more coming into it, and the perfect idea will be some practical idea with some flaws inside which you have to fix, and therefore you need at least one guy, which is Master Risa at the moment, which spent 20% of his time just to do the integration of all the new incoming models and ideas. So just think a little bit further than just the 2 years, and then everything is done and everything works.
Yeah.
Two years is fair. We have like a 10-year plan for this.
Well, something else in developing both XDMF and Polaris, I think, both teams, you guys have to look into that, and the whole community should look into that. I remember years ago when Paul Waddell started developing Urban Sim. His idea was actually the Urban Sim is going to be a platform like that. That's going to be exactly open. And I don't see that actually, what he wanted to happen with that open happening. So probably just it's a good idea to go and look back and see. What are the pitfalls, and maybe we have to talk to Paul, and we're hoping that it's going to be a big workshop and at IETBR, so maybe we can invite him as we can talk about it.
Yeah, because certainly when Paul first started to talk about Opus, I was very, and in fact XDMF sort of comes out of that, out of the experience of not being able to work with Opus. because we actually did try to implement, work with Opus, and we actually were trying to implement sort of a four-step thing, model system within Opus, and we kept having these conference calls with his developers saying, well, we want to do this, and he said, no, you can't do that. And we said, well, why can't you? Well, that's not the way we do it. So there was certain rigidities in their design that didn't seem to actually facilitate the serving. Your point is well taken too. This isn't easy to do. And so the challenge is, how do you build something that's flexible?
Well, we have to change the point of view. We shouldn't look at the problem from our own perspective. So we have to, and that's very difficult.
Yeah. I mean the core of XDMF is not, even though we call it travel modeling framework, it's a framework for modeling. You could my developer keeps saying we could do quantum physics in this if you built the templates and built the modules. The basic core of XDMF is just how do you stitch things together. Establish basic interfaces so that you can build something that executes and compute something useful. And trying to stay, one of the rigidities in Opus was very strict definitions about what's a variable, what's an attribute, different, and I never quite understood the differences. You had to structure your data. I think where one of many places this can break down is getting overly rigid in terms of data specifications and data formats and that sort of thing. So maintaining flexibility about how you're managing data is certainly one starting point. And also, certainly in our work, we're being very incremental, just very pragmatic. We got a model we want to implement, and so we build the modules for that, and we start learning how to generalize and abstract as we go, rather than trying to design from the top down.
Another case that, from history, that some of what you said sounded similar to were presentations I heard from Los Alamos Labs about 15 years ago with transcends.
I'm trying to flex
perceptions about. I think Michael's point of separating out kind of the software functionality from the actual model. So I think it was TransSims was the model.
Right.
No, I know I heard presentations about this is a framework in which you can plug your own model into.
That was a cellular automata presentation from
Buddy.
I was there. So I heard the same thing. Everybody will be using it, and very, very soon, 30 years later, we're still here.
I'm not saying
it's not 30 years. Come on.
I mean, we're originally TransSims people. I mean, that's the whole thing. Is that we were tasked with, the deployment and tech transfer of TransSims for a couple of years. So, a lot of our experience is built already on TransSims. So.
I never heard the TransSims people put a bullet on their slide saying we want to work collaboratively with the transportation model.
So
there you go.
That's a very long conversation. I can tell you a lot about that. Exactly that.
Oh yeah, I can share my personal communication with at the very early stage with Dick Beckman, who was hired, and I'll ask the same question. I said, guys, science shows you, takes experience for the last 300 years. It doesn't work this way. Even if you have revolutionary systems, you have to learn a little bit more about the past. It's gonna fail. And he said, I know, we want to bring some logic models in, but we can't because that was the rule of the game. We have to come with comments completely. So sometimes you have to put like the emperor clothes, you have to do something different.
We're here to help you.
I'm sorry if I asked something that was already discussed because I was serving as a driver too. But what are your thoughts about efficiency? Because the more you constrain yourself in boxes, the less efficient your code is, and all these codes already suffer from terrible runtimes.
I can answer for Polaris at least. That's always a core design consideration for us because in every single piece of modularity that goes into it, I know a lot about low-level CPU and memory architecture, and so I'm making a lot of conscious choices as I'm deciding on which concepts to use or not to use, which will inhibit performance or not. So, and by abstracting, putting that division layer between the high-level stuff and the low-level stuff, it means that you can, as
they said, independently optimize the low-level stuff as opposed to the high-level stuff. So, maybe we should chat, you know, afterwards. We can go through sort of how it works. And I feel pretty confident that, you know, this will deliver a very fast-running application. I mean, you know, it won't be, it'll have a little bit of overhead, but it'll be a very fast application if you love
given players. Given that the person at the top, I mean, you can always take whatever tools you get, right?
Of course, yeah, and he's right. You can always write a bad.
But you're not optimizing for a specific task. You don't know what the tasks are. That's what other people are going to write. So.
For like memory access and.
Well, there's still a fundamental set of things that people want to do that are always true. I mean, you know, the thing is that you always have, you always have sort of objects or something that want to do things. You know, and they want to do things, you know, over some sort of iterations. So.
But optimizing the simulation layout is not something.
We can talk later.
Yeah. Oh,
speaking as a very end user practitioner, I think that both these projects, the Polaris and the XTMF, sound like very useful. And it's something that we at SSUT have like considered, like, oh, we really should write some Python bindings for blah, 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 and make it so that other people can write to our software. And then we're like, oh, we don't have time to do that. And more importantly, we don't have time to maintain it. So I'm really glad that somebody like a natural lab is undertaking this. I think it's a great something that everybody can sort of get behind, and hopefully you guys have the time and resources to maintain it into the future. I definitely encourage you guys to go and try and use things like Opus. I know that you have transcend history to figure out what doesn't work about it and what does, and certainly we kept on wanting to rewrite it Opus as well, and ran into the same sort of issues, and just didn't end up, you know, sort of going that route other than using it for UrbanSend. And then I know your development timeline is kind of long, and I don't know how much integration you're sort of doing with other people in the field, or in real life examples in the short term and along the way as opposed to the long term, and so. I would just certainly encourage an agile sort of development framework to sort of understand what a multitude of opinions are regarding its usefulness. And then, Eric, to your point, I think you hit the nail on the head about integrating all of these sort of open source efforts, and not just open source efforts, but just like sort of efforts in general is really important. And actually, we at SSCTA, we and Lisa, who is actually our other modeler at the TA and who has a history in computer science. We're sitting around after TRV last year and we're like, we really need to have some sort of group of and some sort of collaboration framework. And we kind of sat around long enough waiting for somebody else to do it because we just don't have the time, but found out that nobody has the time. And so I think that she's interested in gathering, she sort of wants to undertake this sort of organization of these collective efforts, and I think she put a website together, and a few people are on a Google group already, but it's sort of in its real bare infancy stages right now, but we'd certainly be interested in collaborating with whoever is interested, and certainly sharing data sets and thoughts as well.
Now you have an MPO on board just to, for the
MPO
case study, then.
No, I'm really happy to hear that, because I mean, you know, that's one of the things we sat down and said we wanted to do, is kind of like, you know, if you're running an agent-based model, you have a lot of great graphical tools to use to put these things together pretty easily. So transportation is this. So I'm happy to hear that, but I'm also happy to hear that there's sort of a collaborative effort going on.
It's heavily desired. So, but what you guys, the stuff that you guys are talking about really resonates with me and our agency's needs.
Good.
So I'm really excited about it.
And to respond to your other question is that, you know, we have been, as people have already pointed out, you know, worked with Eric already, and you know, we've met with coaches, and been running them, we've been collaborating for a while, and then also Ron responded sort of briefly. So, you know, we're really trying to talk to a lot of people.